You are tuned into Radio Zapatista Chiapas. No se olvida, Chiapas is not forgotten. Broadcasting live here on the Mission New College of San Francisco. We are continuing our new programming tonight of two shows, two languages, two different weeks. The first week of the month, we have our regular program of 1 hour of Spanish programming, and tonight we bring you our inauguration of our English program. So stay tuned tonight as we bring you more information. We're continuing, actually, our coverage of the other campaign and the political situation in Mexico. Tonight we bring you two reports straight from Mexico by our compañeros Alejandro Reyes and Daniel Nemzer. They are on a motorcycle trip all throughout Mexico, collecting information and bringing it straight to you here on KPFA 94.1 FM.
Sunday, July 2nd was election day in Mexico. Perhaps the most closely contested campaign was for the presidency between two candidates in particular, Andrés Manuel López Obrador of the center-left PRD and Felipe Calderón of the conservative PAN. On election day, the vote count was so close that the Federal Elections Institute, or IFE, had to announce that they would not be able to declare a winner until the following Wednesday in order to give them time to conclude a careful count. This, however, did not stop the two frontrunners from claiming victory on national television. As Wednesday approached, Mexicans across the country watched the gap narrow between López Obrador and Calderón, until by morning it appeared that Calderón had won by approximately one half of a percentage point, a troubling tight margin considering Mexico's long history of electoral fraud. Soon after, signs of just such a fraud surfaced. The Mexico City daily La Jornada reported irregularities such as full ballot boxes found in the trash, and that almost 3 million ballots, most going to the PRD, had been left out of the initial count. More recently, the López Obrador campaign has released information, including a video allegedly showing a man stuffing ballot boxes in favor of the PAN. Last Sunday, a week after the election, the PRD candidate called a meeting in the Zócalo of Mexico City, where he announced his intentions to contest the results through popular mobilizations and called for vote-by-vote recount.
Amigas y amigos, quiero proponer a ustedes lo siguiente.
Friends, I want to propose to you the following. There are some actions that we can carry out, if, of course, you agree.
Lo consideran.
The proposal is a national march for democracy next Wednesday, starting from every electoral district across the nation and ending in Mexico City. Do we agree?
In this context of uncertainty, it's hard to draw any solid conclusions. Gustavo Esteva, professor at the Universidad de la Tierra in Oaxaca, gave us his perspective on the development of Mexican politics since 2000, including the spectacular death of the PRI and some guesses as to how the current electoral contest may be resolved.
During the last 6 years, what we have seen is the recomposition of the different forces, different political forces, fighting between them for what remains of the state. First with the PRI itself, trying the President Fox gave some artificial respiration to the PRI, to prolong its agony. He did not dare to really bury it. And then the remains of the PRI, not the old PRI, not the old regime, but different mafia-like structures of the PRI survived during these 6 years. They had still dreams of restoration, and they tried to collect themselves and to compete in these elections. That was a very intense exercise with many kinds of arrangements and discussions and accords and agreements, etc. I must say that the most important news after July the 2nd this year is that now we have the real funeral of the PRI. That is the only thing that we have for sure at this moment. The PRI is really dead. But at the same time, what we have, it was the election between the party of President Fox, who represents clearly the right, including the fascist right, but also people that can be classified as center-right, associated with the PAN and with the candidate Calderón. And in the other side, we have Andrés Manuel López Obrador, that represents not so much PRD, that is, at the end, a very small and pretty corrupt party that represented historically no more than 15-17% of the votes in the whole country, but represented a kind of movement following this more or less charismatic leader. And then the outcome of these days is a tie. There has been some manipulation in the media, particularly by the institution handling this operation, giving the victory to Calderon, but the victory is not there. The difference between the two candidates is 0.5%. It implies a very, very sophisticated kind of manipulation of the votes. And then what we have, it's a very dangerous stalemate. In contrast with the US, the final decision right now, it's not in the hands of the court, but it is in the hand of an independent body that include more or less independent judges. They may take the decision of accepting the claims of PRD, claims that they won the election, and they have proofs that they won the elections, that they have proof of many irregularities, and then the tribunal can do one of two things. One is recounting, and then this final recounting accepted by the two parties, and then perhaps that will change the election. And then, of course, Calderon is and his party, they are resisting this possibility of recounting. The other possibility is to declare that the election was not valid, and then we may need another election. In this another election, it looks as if López Obrador may clearly win, but nobody knows exactly what will happen.
Even the Zapatistas and the other campaign, who explicitly reject electoral politics as a farce that will never solve the real day-to-day problems of the people below, have taken a position on the election results. Last week, Subcomandante Marcos announced on a special segment of Radio Insurgente aired from Mexico City that he had received evidence of fraud.
Según la información, habría habido un fraude en las elecciones para presidente de la República.
According to the information we've received, there's been fraud in the presidential election. It happened in the IFE, in complicity and at the behest of President Vicente Fox. They held back between 1 and 1.5 million votes for the PRD, which were then administered to the PAN candidate Felipe Calderón. Thanks to these tricks, the results of the election have been modified. We still have to see what the PRD will say. But according to our information, the president of the IFE, Luis Ugalde, and President Fox were in it together in order to make Calderón win. We, as Zapatistas, have nothing to do with electoral politics, but as moral and ethical actors, we have to speak up when we see that something's wrong, and what we're seeing up there is fraud.
So Comandante Marcos' intervention is particularly interesting in this context because of the Zapatistas' rejection of formal electoral democracy in favor of grassroots participatory, horizontal organizing and decision-making. But this tension seems less a blatant contradiction and more a sign of the complex nature of both politics in Mexico and La Otra Campaña itself. The movement, of course, seeks to connect common struggles and encompasses a wide variety of social groups, collectives, and organizations, from Marxist-Leninists to anarcho-punks to LGBT, to indigenous farmers, to unions, to feminists, and everyone in between. That all of these different groups with different political perspectives could come together at all, let alone in a coordinated march in the capital on election day, attests to the power and attraction of such an inclusive project.
Back here in our studios in New College, San Francisco and La Misión. That was a report from Mexico by our compañero Alejandro Reyes. Thank you very much for that. We continue our report tonight. Now we go to the second piece of audio that we have from Mexico, from the compañeros doing otro periodismo and other journalism. This next segment will deal with the situation in Oaxaca and the teachers who are on strike and the repression that they face from a government that has not been supportive of any of the social movements in Mexico.
Last weekend, the compañero Daniel and I rode from Mexico City to Oaxaca. We parked a motorcycle near downtown and walked toward the Zócalo, the city's main square and spiritual center. We strolled through colonial streets and Baroque churches towards the improvised barricade set up by the teachers' movement, which has taken over the city center. As we crossed the barriers of corrugated iron, we seemed to have entered a different universe. Thousands of men, women, and children camping under tarps, the sounds of revolutionary music, political graffiti denouncing the government oppression on every wall, colorful posters and banners, murals with newspaper clippings and photographs of the June 14th police repression. In the Zócalo, the stands that usually sell artesanías for tourists now sell videos of the teachers' movement, police violence, the repression of San Salvador Atenco. There is a festive yet tense feeling in the air, the liberated feeling of people power combined with the real fear of renewed repression. We interviewed several tourists, both national and foreign, and we found a general puzzlement at the conflicting stories from national and international media and the teachers' own testimonies. In the following days, we talked to teachers, activists, scholars, members of social organizations, and regular people. What we found is a very unique social movement that is part of a growing force that challenges a strictly electoral understanding of democracy. Although many individuals and several groups are adherents to the Zapatistas' other campaign, the movement itself has not formally declared itself part of La Otra Campaña. And yet, it exemplifies in practice the very forms of struggle proposed by the other campaign. The search for new forms of effective participative democracy, the exercise of local autonomy, and the linking of struggles from the left and from below. The movement started in mid-May when the teachers occupied the city center to demand salary increases and better conditions in schools, including infrastructure and food and clothing for the children. 3 weeks later, however, the hard-handed pre-governor Ulises Ruiz, rather than negotiating, chose to violently repress the movement. At 4 a.m. on June 14th, between 2,000 and 2,500 police troops attacked the teachers without warning in what seems to have been a carefully orchestrated repression, not only to clear the city center, but also to instill fear and disarticulate the movement. This Wednesday, an independent human rights commission composed of several dozen civil and human rights organizations presented a 45-page report on human rights violations on June 14th. The report includes denunciations of cruel and inhuman treatment, illegal detentions, violations to due process. There are unconfirmed reports of at least one child dead, whose mother has not declared because she fears for her life, and one woman who aborted due to the beatings. One of the teachers who was detained, who preferred to remain anonymous, told us this story.
Entraron aquí con nosotros, donde muchas mujeres, maestras embarazadas, maestras.
They invaded this area where there were many women, pregnant teachers, older teachers that suffer from poor health, and they trampled everyone. They didn't care if it was children or anything. In my case, my son has asthma. He has a chronic allergy illness. When the gases fell on us, he couldn't breathe, and I had to drag him away, where the police kept saying, grab that child and take him away so he stops crying. So we say people were killed, but the police disappeared them. They buried them in secret. And then when they took us to the building of the 22nd section, they were very violent. They dragged us by the hair. They threatened us with their weapons.
As in the case of San Salvador Atenco, commercial news media have not only failed to report objectively the struggle of the teachers' movement, but have in fact manipulated it to discredit it. In this context, the role of independent media has been fundamental. Radio Plantón, an alternative radio station run by the teachers, provided up-to-date information otherwise inaccessible. This radio station was the first target of the police repression. These are some of the last moments aired by Radio Plantón before the radio was invaded by the police, the equipment destroyed or stolen, and the people beaten.
En este momento se están reprimiendo al movimiento magistral oaxaqueño a la lucha popular del pueblo de Oaxaca.
Radio Plantón was able to get back to the air a few days after the repression, thanks to the solidarity from other alternative radio stations and civil society. This Monday and Wednesday, Radio Zapatista and Radio Plantón transmitted joint programs at their studios, thus starting a transnational collaboration. But the police brutality on June 14th backfired. Within hours, the teachers were able to regroup and return to the city center, taking the police by surprise and beating them away. In the following days, public indignation with repression transformed what had originally started as a teacher's sit-in into a much wider movement that includes over 300 civil organizations, among them many members of the other campaign. The original demands have now been superseded and have been reduced to a single issue, the destitution of Governor Ulises Ruiz. A popular assembly called the APO, Asamblea Popular de Oaxaca, was established as a governing body which makes decisions collectively through a relatively horizontal organization. But the movement can only be properly understood within the larger context of Oaxacan politics. Professor Esteva contextualized the movement.
Oaxaca is the only province in Mexico in which the indigenous people represent a majority. Here represents it 2/3. And the basic political unit in Mexico is the municipality, and Oaxaca, that represents only 3% of the population of Mexico, has 20% of the municipalities. In the whole country you have 2,500 municipalities, and in Oaxaca you have 570. Why? Because this unit, the municipality, that was created by the Spaniards to divide and control, was reappropriated by the people, by the indigenous people, and transformed in their own way of government. These small municipalities are 4 of every 5 of them in the hands of the people. This was because the Zapatistas finally recognized it in 1995 and later in 1998. And it is basically, we have in Oaxaca one government in the hands of the people, basically in the hands of the indigenous community, and the official government in the hands of the state. Well, Oaxaca has a very old tradition of struggling against the formal structures of government. Very few governors were able to conclude their term in office in the last century. Well, this governor that came to the office through cheating became first very authoritarian. He promised 1 million votes to Madrazo, to the PRI. And he did a lot of things trying to govern the people, to govern the country. He organized a fantastic series of public works, very stupid public works, and these public works basically to have some money for the campaign of Madrazo. He put an incredible level of pressure on the people. There were killings and there were many, many aggressions, intimidations, bribes, many, many different kinds of manipulation of the people to promote the vote for Madrazo.
The Assembly's strategy to force the governor's destitution is to force the Federal Senate to declare a state of ungovernability in Oaxaca. To that end, a campaign of civil disobedience started this week with students hijacking several buses and using them to block important intersections in the city. It's uncertain how successful this strategy will be. What is certain, however, is that the movement will not stop. The repression that would be unleashed by Ulises Ruiz against the members of the movement if he were to regain control of the state leaves them no option but to continue fighting for his resignation. The world-famous Guelaguetza, the state's most important folkloric celebration, is scheduled to take place the next 2 weeks. In recent years, what has traditionally been a vibrant expression of the peoples of Oaxaca has become more and more an elite spectacle for tourism. The popular assembly is planning to boycott the official Guelaguetza and organize an alternative People's Guelaguetza instead, open to the public and free of charge. It's unclear how this will be done, and whether they will actually try to prevent the official one from taking place. It's a delicate subject because doing so could incite potentially devastating repression. The struggle in Oaxaca has, of course, profound resonations with Zapatismo, and the other campaign, which is part of the movement, is paying close attention to how the struggle develops, as it represents a live example of people's struggle from the left and from below to be emulated across the country and elsewhere.
We are back here on Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida. Thank you very much to Alejandro for the great report. We are seeing a new situation here in Mexico with the repression that has escalated in the recent months, both in Atenco and in Oaxaca with the teacher strike. But that draws parallels. It draws parallels to the situation here in the United States, here in California, especially with the immigrant rights movement and the movement for autonomy. Part of that we saw recently over at South Central Farm, where they were evicted. South Central Farm was a space of 14 acres in the heart of South Central LA, which was evicted because of politicians, local politicians, and developers sleeping together and sharing the wealth of the people. So here right now I have Miguel Gavila Molina. Let's go ahead and talk about how this parallels to the situation here in the United States, how the repression that we have seen and what we will continue seeing against the immigrants' rights movement.
But you know, Pedro, I mean, whether it's a situation in Mexico with the teachers' unions and the teachers as workers, you know, who are directly involved and are the community and the voice for the community, where they actually, you know, organize the communities. You know, here in the United States, you don't find that. You know, teachers really don't go out and are organizers, right, you know, in the communities dealing with social injustices as it is in Mexico. But here, you know, we do see the repression. We see the repression as a community is being targeted. Tú sabes, el inmigrante is being, you know, criminalized, and demonized to the point to where, you know, there's no humanity, there's no compassion for people who sweat, who give their best years, you know, to provide labor, which is almost like an export that Mexico, you know, exports into the United States, human labor. And it is that labor that, you know, provides the wealth that people, you know, are able to enjoy in this country. But right now, you know, we've seen a lot happening. You know, we've seen the rights of communities and immigrantes, you know, under siege here in the United States. And recently, with the United States government and George II, you know, the White House administration, you know, militarizing the border and sending troops. You know, that should alarm anyone dealing with social justice. You know, as in Mexico, when something happens, what do? They send in the tropas. I mean, so there are parallels, and we can look at that. But I think la cosa, you know, here also, and of course the Mexican elections y todo eso, is that there's a big concern here, you know, for the large Mexican, you know, Chicano community here in the United States on what happens in Mexico, you know, the outcome of the las elecciones. I know a lot of people in this country, you know, that, you know, son Mexicanos, you know, nacionales, they were able to vote in the Mexican elections. You know, and again, hombre, I mean, you know, the fraud, I mean, come on, it's fraude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't say any other way, but they've had good teachers. They've had, you know, United States have had, you know, the Bush administration literally, you know, put together the book on how to steal an election. Even though that's been, you know, almost customary in Mexico, I mean, we didn't see it, you know, as sophisticated as this time.
And another thing that we do see now with the other campaign, as you mentioned, how there is that interest of a wider Mexico, of a Mexico across the border here in the north, here in California. And that is part of the other campaign. That is part of the movement in Mexico to include the Chicanos, the Latinos, the Mexicanos living here on the other side of the border on occupied Mexico, as some of the adherents have been calling this section here of Aztlán. So we do see a hope here within the other campaign, within the Zapatista movement, for more organizing and more interchange between the two populations on both sides of the border.
You know, and al mismo tiempo, Pedro, I mean, if you look at the root cause, you know, what is causing this? And of course, we know it's, you know, U.S. policy, you know, like NAFTA. I mean, when NAFTA came out, the Zapatistas immediately responded. This is a death blow to the agricultural, you know, communities, you know, system of you know, livelihood we've had for mostly, you know, people living outside of the, you know, urban areas. Pero if you look at that root cause, you know, it's NAFTA, it's the, you know, it failed economic policies in Mexico and throughout Latin America that have caused this massive migration. And yet, you know, the government doesn't look at those factors. It looks at it as a national security problem. And when you start equating, you know, people seeking bread, el pan, you know, as terrorists, you know, it's frightening. And especially when there's a lack of response by the mainstream, you know, white progressive communities in this country. Where are they? And the progressive unions, where are they? I mean, there are unions involved in the movimientos, you know, del inmigrante, in the immigrant rights movements, you know, but mostly made up of inmigrantes themselves, right. You know, mostly made up of those immigrant communities. But where are those other unions that are non-Latino, non-immigrant? You know, where is that, you know, radical left? I mean, we have yet to see that. So I think that the Zapatista movement in Mexico has gotten global support, you know, has gotten, you know, a lot of attention from other movimientos around the world. But I think, you know, here in the United States, you know, the immigrant community and the immigrant revolution that is occurring needs to be supported by those progressive groups outside of this country that are directly linked to those communities, those immigrant communities.
Yes, that is very much true. A very good point. And we also do need more people of color to join this fight, join this struggle, and let's unite. Let's collect forces. So once again, we run out of time. We are at the 9:30 hour, so we would like to say thank you very much to our compañeros over in Mexico for the great reports. Thank you to Indy Media Chiapas for the space to transport a lot of this information. And before we go, I do have a quick announcement. They'll be showing a video, the two videos, the movies, documentaries, Atenco, Rompiendo el Cerco, and Granito de Arena, about the teacher's strike in Oaxaca. And this will be shown tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Canal Welcome Center in San Rafael. If you want more information on this, contact 994-3661 at the 415 area code. So we say goodbye for now. We will be back August 4th for our programming in Spanish. So stay tuned to Radio Zapatista. Chiapas no se olvida.
If you got the anger, then it's time to get it managed. Throw your fists in the air and let's do some damage. Fill it up, now you let it all out. Scream inside your head, now you're ready for the bout. The battle, the fight, the war within yourself. It's easy to forget and put it on the shelf. Therapeutic therapy, now I'm dealing with my hate. You put that shit up on someone else's plate. Whoever said, time heals all wounds. Didn't just the pain, cause the pain always goes down. Inside your soul, lost inside your head. Now only time is in control. 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 Managed to handle and curb my aggression. Live music has become my group session. Every time I perform, Dr. Mama is the driving force behind all this drama. Chicano.